You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Welcome to this episode of the Business of Practice podcast, where we focus on the business and human sides of equine veterinary medicine. In this episode, we're going to talk with Dr. Rebecca Husted about what veterinarians can expect when called to help at a horse trailer accident. I'm your host, Dr. Amy Grice, business consultant and former equine practice owner. The Business of Practice podcast is brought to you in 2026 by Care Credit. Dr. Rebecca Jimenez Husted published the first textbook on technical large animal emergency rescue with Tomas and Kimberly May through Wiley Blackwell in 2008. She is a decorated combat veteran, retired signal officer, U.S. Army, holds a bachelor's in biology from Wofford College, and a PhD in animal physiology from Clemson University. She provides training in technical large animal emergency rescue techniques across the U.S. and internationally. She has published numerous critiques, techniques, and journal articles on a variety of technical subjects in large animal disaster and emergency rescue, horse barn fires, and heavy rescue of large animals. She contributes to equine welfare committees and other organizations defining technical competencies for large animal rescue around the world. Welcome, Dr. Husted. I'm so excited to have you here with us today.
I'm glad to be here.
You have been passionate about large animal rescue for a long time, and you've taught so many veterinarians and first responders about the subject. Equine veterinarians are often called to trailer wrecks when animals are involved, and I remember my experience on the middle of a thruway, and I'll tell you, as I was driving there, I was feeling pretty anxious. There's a lot of anxiety about going to an unfamiliar situation. So tell us what veterinarians should expect when they get to one of these calls. Who's in charge? What should they do when they first arrive? How does that all work?
If you weren't stressed, I would say that there's something wrong with you, because you need to be stressed and worried, because these kinds of things, first of all, it's in a very unfamiliar situation, usually on the side of a roadway, which is really dangerous. And that's probably going to be the bailiwick for the emergency responders. If nobody's called 911, they should be calling 911, because the first thing is your safety on the side of the road, not the horse. As much as we want to help the horse, and it's not the client, it's your safety number one. And that's something that we do in the fire service, is we say you have to be safe first, and then you help the people on the scene be safe, and then anything else, which animals would fall into the anything else category, vehicles, animals, trailers, those kinds of things. So when we get to those kinds of scenes, we got to think about our safety, which I would love it if you wore a helmet. And I'd also love it if you put on some kind of reflective vest. I don't care if you get it at Tractor Supply, that identifies you as being a human being moving around on the roadway, because all the traffic that's coming by you is the first most dangerous thing. It's a lot more dangerous than the horse that can kick you in the face, having a vehicle slam into a person. And sadly, it happens all the time. So those are some of the first basic things to think about. Getting 911 to the scene, and if they're already there, which oftentimes they're the one that called you in the first place, so they are there first, is finding what we call the incident commander. That's the person from the fire service that is in charge of the scene. And the reason for that is, literally, they're the person that goes to jail if somebody gets hurt. In the fire service, they're very serious about that. Law enforcement, the same way. And depending on what state you're in, it could be that law enforcement is in charge in the beginning, simply because it's on a public roadway. In other jurisdictions, it might be the fire service that's in charge. Let them argue about that. Find the incident commander, who is actually in charge, and say, hey, I'm a veterinarian. I bring a lot of my medical skills to the scene, but what's going on? How can you use me? And what is the plan here? And what they'll do is they'll turn around and say, I thought you had the plan. So because it's an animal and the fire departments and law enforcement at least know what they've seen in the movies, that things can kick and bite and hurt people, usually they'll wait until you get there. So then you're thrust into the situation of being in charge of something that you've never done before. So we all know how much fun that is. That's like taking the Navli. So let's sort of break that down. If we talk to the incident commander, we should be saying, hey, I want to make an assessment of this scene. An assessment of the scene would be, how many horses are we talking about? Are we sure it's horses? Just because it's a horse trailer doesn't mean there's horses in it. It could have sheep in it. It could have horses and sheep. It could have, it could be a zoo trailer and you just didn't know about it. Zoos move things in trailers like that. It could be a Siamese crocodile for all you know. So until we make an assessment and know actually what's in the trailer, that may or may not be easier if the owner is on scene. The challenge, as we all know, in the veterinary world is some owners are sane and can really help us, and some owners are not so sane and may be destructive to our efforts to do things. So evaluating the owner, the fire department will probably be surprised at how crazy horse owners can be. And so they may dump that on you too. Hey, you got to handle this owner because we don't know what to do with them. Believe it or not, as veterinarians, you have a lot more experience with dealing with crazy horse people. So trying to talk them off the ledge, trying to keep them out of the trailer until we make our assessment, figure out what our plan is. Is the horse in a trailer that just fell off of the truck and it's still standing up? Do the horses just have some injuries? Are they upside down? Are they on top of each other? Is the trailer on its roof, on its side? All those ways that a trailer can be, or the things that are in it, would affect how we respond to that scene. And I'll just tell you that what we always tell firefighters is go slow, make a plan, and keep people safe. For example, if you pull a door open and a horse leaves that trailer and now it's out on that interstate, you could be held liable because now it's going to get hit by a secondary vehicle. So think about those kind of things. How can we get positive control of the horse? Can we, can we give it some, I'm not a veterinarian, I'm a PhD, but I'm going to tell you, you guys have the drugs. So, I'm a big fan of chemical control. If I can give it something, have the veterinarian give it something that's going to keep it calm and more relaxed and make our scene safer, I'm a big fan of doing that. The problem is... Sometimes you can't get them out of the trailer now, right? Because you've got them so nice and calm that now you can't get them out of the trailer. So that, that's this the art and science of veterinary medicine, right?
This is bringing back such a memory of my call at 2 a.m. for a trailer tipped over. It was coming back from a standardbred race and the driver fell asleep and he drove into the median. And the trailer tipped over on its side. So we're on, like the New York State Thruway with the trailer on its side with the horse inside. Guess what I did that I shouldn't have done? He was on the downside. I crawled in and sedated him. Yeah, no, without a helmet.
Without a helmet. And you know what's really funny is I talk to a lot of equine veterinarians in these kinds of situations and they tell me, well, I had to crawl in there because I had to get jugular access. And I go, you can use the tail vein on a horse. And they go, What? We never use tail veins. And I go, no, you don't, because a standing horse will kick your head off. But a horse is laying down in the trailer on the side and you've got access to his rear end where you can be in a safe position. We have done that on numerous occasions. And they go, And I go, go back to your Pasquini and look at your anatomy.
Figure it out. So then we used a wrecker that was on scene to lift the front of the trailer. And we, slid the horse out by his tail. And do you know what? He just stood up. He had a few lacerations. They had another trailer that had come from the SPCA. They'd closed that side of the highway, of course. That horse just stepped right on that other trailer and rode the 2 miles to to the SPCA where I followed him, sutured up his lacerations, blah, blah, blah.
You did the right thing. Yeah. First of all, you got off the scene. You got him to a place that's calmer and quieter and safer for you to be able to do the, you did your primary triage on scene. He's not going to die.
And the crawling in the trailer.
That's right. But you did the right things getting him out of that situation. And
yeah,
as far as horses getting on trailers, if they're good loaders, they load on anything.
I know.
The wreck has nothing to do with it.
It's amazing.
They don't perceive that as being the problem.
The Business of Practice podcast is brought to you by Care Credit. Care Credit keeps equine veterinarians at the heart of care by providing horse owners with simple, budget-friendly financing options. By helping to bridge the gap between costs and Care Credit supports healthy financial relationships between veterinarians and their clients. Clients have a flexible way to pay over time for all types of care, and practices get paid in 2 business days. It's a payment experience everyone can feel good about.
Do you want to describe some common situations, common injuries, and let's talk about some safe approach methods too.
Yes. Okay. So common situations, I sort of split it into 2 things. So the first one would be it's on the side of the road and something has happened. A collision, the trailer came loose from the trailer, something with vehicles involved. And the second situation is probably a lot more common. The horse has an incident inside the trailer. They were loading it or unloading it and it hurts itself, hurts other things, or hurts the trailer as well as itself while you're loading it, unloading it, or just driving down the road. For whatever reason, it has a come apart emotionally. It can't stand that and really hurts itself inside the trailer. And of course, those are in some ways, those are very different situations, but in some ways they're the same. The ones that happen in the parking lot are probably safer as far as not having vehicles flying by you. You're probably not going to have the local emergency responders come to those kinds of situations because very few people would call, hey, I've got a horse that's upside down in a trailer in my parking lot. Most people wouldn't call 911, although I will tell you that you can if you're looking for enough support and help. Or if you need cutting equipment, you should consider calling 911 because the reason they come is not only to help with cutting and that kind of stuff, but they're also really good at safety and keeping you in an approach that'll keep you safe. And then the ones that are on the side of the road, the common situations are it comes off the hitch for whatever reason. It may or may not get separated from the truck or the trailer. When those things happen, usually the trailer is still on its normal configuration. In other words, it slows down, slams into the truck. The truck may flip, all those kind of things, but many times the trailer is still straight up and down. The problem is inside the trailer, what happened to the horses? And that's where our injuries start. So if you think about the animals are standing forward or they're standing slant forward in a slant trailer, as soon as the horse realizes its body picks up the information that it's falling forward, what does it do? It tries to do what we would do. It throws against the wall and it tries to stand up. Its instinct is always to stand up. So where does its feet go? Its feet go into the holes. The feet go into the whatever it slammed into. Maybe that's why I hate some of these dividers that have things that horses' feet can fit through them. It tries to stand up no matter what obstacles are in front of it. And when it does that, it may put its feet through things or stand on other horses, metal pieces, those kind of things as it tries to stand up. As it stands up, it throws its head up. As it throws its head up, it hits whatever, because it's trying to balance, right? It hits whatever is above it. So maybe it slid underneath the divider. Maybe it slams into the wall, or which is no longer the wall. Maybe it's the roof now, depending on the situation. And then what's interesting is in lots of these hundreds of wrecks that we've looked at, once they stand up, they stand there because they realize, they're waiting for the next thing. So they're waiting for you to open that door. They're waiting for something to change. They're waiting for some weird sounds to stimulate them. But often when you pull up to a horse trailer wreck, they're actually quiet. They're waiting for you to do something different. And when you do, that's when they will try. We've got videos of horses trying to crawl out of doors that people have opened or even on the top. When you open it up and light comes in, the horse says, that's my only exit, especially wild horses. and they just try to crawl out through the top. You would think it wouldn't be possible, but it does happen. So stay the heck out of the way. Make your assessment without actually having to put your body parts in there and get that sedation or whatever you're going to do, chemical control early on. That will help you with keeping the entire situation under some semblance of control.
Most of us don't carry a pole syringe.
That's okay. You can make a pole syringe out of a syringe, some duct tape, and the fire department will always have pole. They've got these long poles that they have on every single truck. And with some duct tape and a syringe, you can make yourself a pole syringe. It's not exactly the most wonderful thing, but anybody can figure that out.
How do you press the plunger?
Just like tape, if it's on the tape the plunger to the end of it and then go in and push.
Oh.
Dr. Stacy Boswell and her folks out there in Montana with you, they actually did one that was down in a big hole doing the exact same thing. Duct tape and a pole from the fire department.
Gotcha.
Or a broom handle. Broom handles will work too.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So common injuries just kind of from bashing around inside.
So lots of head things and lots of lower leg things.
Yeah.
I'd imagine. Amy, you know, there's been a lot of things in the industry where we're talking about not putting boots on things to work them and run them. And we understand that. Mm-hmm. But we still say protect those lower legs in transit. Something on those lower legs to prevent those lower leg injuries. I don't care if you use something that you wrap it. I'm not a big fan of Pony Club wraps and stuff, but I love Velcro. So put something around it with Velcro, protect those lower legs.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the same as running it.
Right. What are the best practices for, you were talking with me earlier about getting patients to definitive care, get them off the scene. And how to do that efficiently? Like, do you think about that before when you first assess? How do you do that?
So hopefully you have a good relationship with your fire department ahead of time. That's hard. That's easy to say. It's hard to do. If you have a local fire department in your jurisdiction, maybe you've called them and said, hey, here's my phone number. And if you guys had one of these, you could call me. But please call me early. While you're driving to the scene, that you're the one that knows more about those kinds of resources than anybody else. You know who actually has their trucks and trailers hitched all the time that you could call at 2 a.m. and get them to show up on a scene. That's really difficult. The fire department is not going to have any of those resources. They're going to be looking at you to try to get those kinds of resources. That's transit time, right? I pulled up on a wreck here about 15 years ago on I-75. And it was polo ponies on the side of the road. And it was funny. It happened as one guy that was going to the local saddle club meeting, and he made the phone calls, and he knew that there was a vet literally 3 miles down the road. So he called the vet, got her to the scene. He called some friends. I pull up on the scene on my way to the airport to help, and there's all these horse trailers pulling up. And I was like, where'd y'all get these? And they said, well, we just knew people. That's what it comes down to. And as a veterinarian, you're going to be the one that knows those folks. But what they did, not right or wrong, they called a bunch of people that had 2 horse trailers. And there was 13 horses on the side of the interstate. So we were loading, 7 trailers worth of horses on the side of the interstate. I would have preferred to have 2 6-horse trailers or whatever, right? A lot bigger trailers, and it would have been easier to load because some horses just don't go on 2-horse trailers, especially on the side of the interstate. But
I guess it depends on who you know.
It depends on who you know. I mean, and it depends on who you can get at 2 a.m. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That's always the challenge. So there's no way to really prep for that other than to have a resource. We try to tell fire departments they should have a resource list. They should have 2 or 3 veterinarians in their area, both small and large animal, that they can call. Then they should have that relationship ahead of time. But sometimes it comes down to you reaching out to your local fire department, finding out who they are, and explaining what you do. Because sometimes they don't know that a small animal vet is not a large animal vet. They just don't know. They say, call a vet. Well, we all know that if a small animal veterinarian shows up, I'm not being mean, but they're not going to have enough stuff to deal with horses on the side of the road.
Well, it's the same thing if, you know, if they called one of an equine veterinarian to go see something that they'd never seen, you know, it would be bad. Okay. What are the top three things that a veterinarian, an equine veterinarian in this situation needs to have in their truck? Like, we may not really be thinking about this, but before we leave our house, are there, or our get in our truck, is there anything extra and special we should make sure we have, like a flashlight or drugs?
Okay, absolutely. I love flashlights, but these days, the simplest thing, I think a lot of veterinarians have them, is the ones
head
that go
lamp.
on your
yeah.
head. And it's even better if you put it on a helmet so that you don't hit your head on something. And the cool thing about that is you can put the light on there and you can put your GoPro and then you can post it up on the internet. No, just teasing. or not. So those, you know, that's really the other thing that is amazing, how many times people transport horses on the side of the, in trailers and they don't have a trailer. I mean, a helmet. Sorry. They don't have a halter. It's crazy.
A halter.
They don't
yes.
have halters yeah. on the horses and they don't have lead ropes. So I always tell people, keep some lengths of rope in the trailer, in your truck, whatever, so that you can actually reach out and grab that rope and put an emergency rope halter in this animal. Or if he has a halter on, they don't have a lead rope, you can put a lead rope on the horse. It sounds crazy, but primary control of that animal is a big deal, and you guys know how to do those things. So I don't like having extra halters in the truck simply because, you know, if it's draft horses, your normal size halters aren't going to help. If it's miniature horses, it's not going to help. So I like having, you know, 15, 20 feet of rope that I can make an emergency rope halter out of if I have to. But getting primary care of those animals, and I don't like to take them out of the trailer until I've got that transport there. I just
absolutely
because you know, on the side of the road, although those polo ponies, that veterinarian up there, she had sedated the snot out of them. They had their lips on the ground and they had tied them to the guardrail in the center of the interstate. And those horses were like, they were just smoking dope, man. They were standing there with their heads on the ground and they did not care. But it was a pain in the butt to load them in the trailer after that much sedation.
Oh,
they were like,
no doubt.
What do you want
no
me to do?
No doubt. Yeah. Wow. Is there anything else that you'd like to share with our listeners about this kind of a situation? And can you tell our listeners where to learn more?
There is a ton of information out there. If you put in Dr. Rebecca Husted horse trailer, anything, you will find. I've got webinars out there. There's all kinds of resources. You really got to educate yourself. And part of that is also reaching out to your clients and getting them to understand many of these trailer wrecks start because people haven't done maintenance. And I'm talking fancy trailers. I'm talking bloomers. I'm talking big, fancy $150,000 trailers. Just had one the other day. He hit a railroad track and it broke the nose on the gooseneck. Now, was that the manufacturer? Was that the truck? I don't know. I haven't gotten the pictures yet. But those kind of things show me that somebody somewhere, as far as maintenance, probably wasn't doing what they had to do, or they didn't hitch it correctly. So educating ourselves, educating our clients, providing the kind of resources to them and saying, and having the guts to look around. And when you're walking through their thing and you see something wrong, hey guys, you need to do something about that trailer. That just doesn't look right. Now I do that and people look at me like I'm a butthead and I go, yep, I'm a butthead. And guess what? I'm going to save your horse's life. Because if you don't do something about that trailer, and put a horse on that trailer, it, you know, we just had one the other day, horses through the trailer, you know, in South Carolina. So
yeah,
maintenance, safety, knowing how to hitch, knowing how to properly unhitch, as well as how to load and unload your horses and spending the time. I see so many people that their horse glides and slides and does all the fancy things in the arena, but it gets injured because it won't load and unload in the trailer. So let's spend a little more time doing those kind of things too.
Wow. So much, right? Thank you so much for joining us today and sharing this critical information. And thank you all for joining us for the Business of Practice podcast. And a big thanks to our sponsor, Care Credit. And to all my listeners out there, be brave, embrace change, and teach people about how to trailer safely.